Monday, June 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, survivors, family members, and the city of Hong Kong commemorate the 29th anniversary of the bloody crackdown on Beijing's Tiananmen Square.
The Chinese authorities say that they've already, you know, closed the book on this. There's already been an accounting given. And so we're not really seeing any movement whatsoever from authorities here.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau condemns President Donald Trump's decision to impose tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum, and a concert truck brings classical music from auditoriums to the downtown streets. It's all ahead. The United States is calling on China to disclose the full number of casualties during the military's bloody 1989 crackdown on pro-democracy protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo issued a statement Monday, the 29th anniversary of the massacre, saying the United States joined the international community in urging the Chinese government to make a full public accounting of those killed, detained, or missing. Human rights groups believe several hundred to several thousand people may have been killed when tanks rolled through Tiananmen Square to squelch the student-led demonstrations. Beijing forbids any form of public or private observance of the Tiananmen Square massacre on the mainland. An annual public observance, the only one of its kind on Chinese soil, was held in Hong Kong's Victoria Park. Organizers claim at least 100,000 people attended the candlelight vigil. VOA's Beijing correspondent Bill Ide tells me about how the anniversary impacts people throughout the world.
So we'll definitely be seeing a lot of people, you know, using this opportunity to again remind the Chinese government of what, you know, many feel needs to be addressed. And this was something that was brought up in the statement from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Sunday, where he was talking about how China needs to address the ghosts of its past, to give a full accounting for those who were killed, died, or you know, disappeared during this crackdown. And to the date, you know, this is something that China says it's the Chinese authorities say that they've already, you know, closed the book on this. There's already been an accounting given. And so we're not really seeing any movement whatsoever from authorities here.
Has Beijing responded to Pompeo's statement?
Yes, they have. And they say that they've issued some stern representations to the United States. And of course, as you would expect, that, you know, accusing him of kind of interfering in China's own internal affairs. Spokeswoman Hua Chunying also talked about how this is something that comes up every year and the United States kind of seems to be using this to bring up an issue that in their minds is something that's already passed and it's not something to be discussed anymore. And if it's going to be discussed, it's going to be discussed by the Chinese government. But, you know, they have really made it impossible for that to happen. The families of those who lost children during the crackdown have been trying for nearly three decades now to get some kind of response, some kind of an answer from the government about what happened, more clarity on the facts. And what they receive in return is oppression every year. Some of them are forced to travel outside of the capital. They're under heavy surveillance, especially around this time of the year. And as the years have passed, many of these parents who, you know, only had one child have just watched and nothing has happened, and they've passed on.
Has security around Tiananmen Square itself in Beijing, has that been heightened?
It always is, and you know, we've had reports today of people trying to go near the square to do reporting and questions on the street, you know, interviews on the street to try to see what everyday citizens know or remember about that time. And of course, they're being quickly you know, zeroed in on by police and shooed away from. It's a very tough story to cover in China every year. You know, in fact, in one previous anniversary where we were doing stories on it, you know, you didn't even show the faces of the people that we talked to. You get some, you know, you were surprisingly a lot of people know about it and have memories from it, but it's not something that is openly discussed or people can freely discuss.
Well, also in his statement, Pompeo said that on this anniversary, he said that we remember the tragic loss of innocent lives, and that he said that, as Liu Xiaobo wrote in his 2010 Nobel Peace Prize speech, the ghosts of June 4th have not yet been laid to rest. Well, now Liu Xiaobo was involved in the protests. He also died in custody last year, and I believe his wife, Liu Xia, remains, she is being held in custody, although she has not been officially charged with a crime.
That's right. She's never been charged, but been held ever since he received that prize. And, you know, her psychological and health, the state that she's in, there's huge concern overseas about that. We have rights groups today, you know, again, calling for her release, or at least her being allowed to travel overseas for medical treatment. Chinese authorities continue to say that she's being handled in accordance with Chinese law and that she's free to do whatever she wants. But we know that that's not what is the reality here. And like her husband, she's someone that, you know, suffers to this day. And in extension, I guess, because of what happened in Tiananmen, because, you know, Liu Xiaobo was such an influential person during those protests, and after, he had a lot of his activism was, you know, not only directed towards democracy, but for deep concern that he had for the families of those who lost children during the protests.
VOA correspondent Bill Ide reporting from Beijing. Some of the top news stories that are trending. A suicide blast hits an anti-war Afghan clerics meeting in Kabul. A Guatemala volcano eruption kills at least 25 people. The U.S. Supreme Court sides with a baker who refused to make a cake for a same-sex couple. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo meets with Turkey's foreign minister in a bid to reduce bilateral tensions. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
In a minute.
A team of scientists say they've discovered an area covered with dunes on Pluto's surface after studying detailed images taken in 2015 by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft. Detailing their findings in the journal Science, the team goes on to say that the dunes are made up of sand-sized grains of methane that they think were created through a process known as sublimation. That's the process of transforming a solid into a gas. This dune-covered area is less than 75 kilometers across and was found on the border of Pluto's heart-shaped ice plain, Sputnik Planitia, and a major mountain range. The grains of methane were thought to have been carried by Pluto's winds, which are said can reach anywhere from 30 to 40 kilometers per hour. The scientists also say it's likely the dunes formed within the last 500,000 years, or maybe even more recently. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Jordan's prime minister resigns after 4 days of protests over an income tax law. Ahead of the Group of Seven meeting in Quebec this week, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau denounced the end of Canada's exemption from U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum as an affront to the two countries' long-standing close relationship.
The idea that, you know, our soldiers who had fought and died together on the beaches of World War II and the mountains of Afghanistan and have stood shoulder to shoulder in some of the most difficult places in the world, that are always there for each other, somehow this is insulting to them. The idea that the Canadian steel that's in military vehicles in the United States, the Canadian aluminum that makes your fighter jets, is somehow now a threat. The idea that we are somehow a national security threat to the United States is quite frankly insulting and unacceptable.
Trudeau, appearing on the NBC program Meet the Press, has threatened retaliatory duties. White House Chief Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow on the Fox News Sunday broadcast called his comments an overreaction and insisted the dispute amounts to a family quarrel.
I don't think we're satisfied yet that they will protect or uphold all the shipments of steel coming into Canada from around the world. Could be China, could be Brazil, could be a lot of different places. This transshipping effort is something that has been troubling to us. Look, the president has declared our steel industry a national security matter, and he hopes through these actions to rebuild it. There's some early signs that that may be possible. But look, in the communique, in the announcement from the White House, it said very clearly that we still welcomed good faith negotiations, and that's why I regard this as more of a family quarrel. This is a trade dispute, if you will. It can be solved if people work together.
Kudlow acknowledged the dispute is serious and could affect the U.S. economy, but said global trade rules are being routinely violated and that reform is overdue. He said that's why President Donald Trump is standing up for U.S. interests. University of Toronto political science director Nelson Wiseman tells International Edition's Victor Beatty this is a no-win trade dispute.
Canada will suffer because the U.S. is a much larger economy. But the Americans will suffer as well, consumers and a number of American industries, including American defense. Trump's position is consistent with his belief in surprise, in chaos. It also contradicts what he said when he first met Trudeau, when he talked about, well, we could tweak our relationship with Canada. This isn't an example of tweaking. Now, aluminum is an example with these duties where the U.S. is shooting itself in the foot. According to a former advisor to the U.S. International Trade Commission, a fellow who's an expert on aluminum and is with Harbor Aluminum in Texas, he says that basically the Americans have now written a check for $600 million to Canadian aluminum producers. Canadian aluminum is produced much more efficiently. When it comes to an international crisis now, we'll see how successful the U.S. is in marshalling its traditional allies. There will be a sense of less obligation to go along with the American position.
Can this issue be resolved?
I was fairly confident that Canada would continue to be granted an exemption. I wasn't sure that Mexico would, and I didn't know what the European situation was, so I'm quite frankly surprised. I should also point out that Canada intends to introduce countermeasures, and it's floated a number of ideas, but it's also indicated that they won't come into effect until July 1 because it wants to spend 2 weeks getting input from Canadian industries, and anyone about what American products they think ought to be subject to a tariff, how much, and what the implications are of the long list of items that Canada has proposed could be subject to tariffs. Everything from yogurt to cucumbers.
As for the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA renegotiation, Prime Minister Trudeau said progress has been made in the auto and agricultural sectors, but said Washington's insistence on a 5-year sunset clause, whereby the pact has to be renegotiated each time, makes no sense. Jordan's prime minister has resigned following 4 days of protests over a new income tax law. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Jordanian Prime Minister Hani al-Mulki's resignation Monday followed 4 nights of protests in towns and cities across the country, including their focal point outside the Prime Minister's office in the capital, Amman. Arab media reports Education Minister Omar Razaz has been asked by King Abdullah to form a new government. Al-Mulki had insisted on presenting his new income tax bill to Parliament despite popular protests.
إرسال قانون ضريبة الدخل إلى مجلس النواب
He says sending the income tax law to Parliament for debate does not in any way mean that Parliament has agreed to it or any part of it. The government had been trying to push through a variety of tax increases as part of a loan package agreement with the International Monetary Fund. Jordan currently has a public debt of nearly $40 billion. Tax increases on fuel, electricity, and water, along with a new income tax plan, have aroused public ire. Jordanian police chief Fadl al-Hamoud said Monday several arrests were made during the protests. He says 60 people were arrested for breaking the law and rioting, including attacking public and private property. He adds 8 of those arrested were from other Arab countries and that police are trying to determine what they were up to. Hamoud said 40 members of the country's security forces were injured during the protests. He says that firearms have been used against the security forces along with firecrackers and knives in the area of Amman's Fourth Circle, where the prime minister's offices are located. Jordanian commentator Shahab Makahli, head of the Geostrategic Media Center and director of political studies at Jordan's Middle East Institute, tells VOA the demonstrations have been against corruption, not against the regime, and that protesters hope to reform the economic system by way of a respectable civil movement. Makahli says he thinks the current crisis may be tied to U.S. efforts to impose a peace settlement between Israel and the Palestinians, referred to in Arab media as the deal of the century. He claims such a deal will call on Jordan to give up its custodianship over Jerusalem's holy sites and could cause political tremors in the Middle East. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Classical music is often thought of as an elite art, usually performed in concert halls to a dedicated, dressed-up audience. But two young pianists are working hard to make this style of music more accessible to wider audiences. As Faiza Al-Masri tells us, to do that, they're offering free performances on a mobile stage, the Concert Truck. Faith Lapidus narrates.
Practicing piano is part of Susan Zhang's daily routine.
Ideally, I like to get about like 4 hours of practicing each day.
Nick Luby also rehearses daily, especially today, as the two musicians have a performance. After getting their piano ready, Zhang and Luby hop into the Concert Truck, a 5-meter-long vehicle equipped with speakers and lights. They drive to their performance site. Today, it's downtown Baltimore, in front of a farmer's market. It takes a few minutes to transform the truck into a stage and start performing for the midday lunch crowd.
It's an amazing time we live in because people can listen to music anywhere they are on their earphones with MP3 players, but there's something about live music that is essentially human and connecting. And when you listen to live music, there's an energy that you just can't get from a recording. And it brings people together. And for me, makes life worth living.
Nick was actually the person who originally came up with the idea. And when he came to me with this idea, I thought he was a little crazy. But but then I watched this movie, Chef. And it's about a chef who has a food truck and he travels across the country, and I thought that that kind of life would be so cool. So I decided to go in on this with him.
She says performing on board a truck surrounded by the noise of street traffic is a different experience.
Usually when we perform in the concert hall, everything is very controlled. Everybody is very quiet and the lighting is to be just right. But in a place like this, I mean, anything could really happen.
And the artists don't take it personally when people pass by and don't stay to listen.
When people walk by and, you know, listen for a second and keep going, you definitely notice. But the fact that someone will stop even for a minute is a nice thing to be able to share that moment with people.
Reba Kornman, a Baltimore resident, was buying some herbs at the farmer's market when she heard music.
I was walking to the market and buying herbs actually right in back of me, and all of a sudden I heard Prokofiev's Cinderella being performed on piano. It was extraordinary. And I know they're trying to reach out to all kinds of audiences, and being on a truck is such a remarkable way to do that.
The concert truck has brought music to schools, children's homes, and homeless shelters, in addition to public squares in several cities in South Carolina, Ohio, Maryland, and Minnesota.
The dream is to create a platform that allows musicians, not just us, but many musicians, to share their craft and their art broadly.
That dream is what keeps Lubian Zhang energized and on the road, bringing the concert truck and classical music to new audiences. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
That's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. State Department has released its annual report on the state of religious freedom around the world. The picture of Iran that emerges is a grim one, particularly for religious minorities. As Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom Sam Brownback noted at the report's release.
We hear and see horrific reports coming out of Iran on the lack of religious freedom and the persecution of people that aren't in the majority faith stream and practicing as the government directs. And we see a radical export of that philosophy as well out of Iran and trouble in many other countries in the Middle East.
According to the report, Baha'is in Iran continue to face severe government and societal discrimination. Nearly 100 Baha'is remained in prison solely because of their faith. In November, a court sentenced three Baha'i students who were barred from university studies, Ruhia Savaju, Sermad Shodabi, and Hira Hushmand, to 5 years in prison for being Baha'i. There are reports of authorities placing restrictions on Baha'i businesses or forcing them to shut down, and continued instances of desecration of their cemeteries. Christians, particularly evangelicals and converts from Islam, continue to experience disproportionate levels of arrests and detentions. Numerous Christians were charged in connection to their religious beliefs and activities and sentenced to prison, including Pastor Youssef Nodohoni and Victor Bet Tamraz. Ibrahim Firouzi continued to serve a 5-year prison sentence for converting to and practicing Christianity and related missionary activities. At least 6 Gonabadi dervishes faced imprisonment on convictions of waging war against the state and following a deviant sect. There were also reports of arrests and harassment of Sunni clerics and congregants, including the June trial of Hassan Amini, Secretary General of Iran's Council of Sunni Theologians, on charges of propaganda against the state. Authorities continued to discriminate against the Sabian, Mandaean, and Yarzan religious communities as well. Ambassador Brownback said that freedom of religion is a foundational human right, that no government has the right to repress, and that every government has the duty to protect. A key goal of the United States, he said, is to promote religious freedom for all people. That includes members of religious minorities in Iran. We all have a stake in this fight, Ambassador Brownback declared. We must move religious freedom forward. We must defend it in every corner of the globe.